It's absolutely damaging. I mean, to walk around and to not feel as though you are truly living within a space, truly accepted within a place, feel as though you're being watched. That's a certain type of violence and torture that people of color, in particular men, have to face in these scenarios that absolutely has to be addressed.
And so how does this play out in the public space exactly?
I do think that some people are very, very cautious when they're out in public, in the public sphere, when they go out into public spaces with family, friends, and especially when they're alone. But I think some people react absolutely differently. They react by being that much more verbose, that much more loud, that much more kind of bright in their actions, in their gestures, in their engagements with strangers as a way of actually trying to make fun of the types of stereotypes that they know they have to confront on a daily basis. I have never encountered an individual who was unaware of those conditions. And so this is something that people regularly deal with. This is kind of the quotidian existence for Black and brown peoples in the United States.
Now, of course, moving forward in this case, Mr. Zimmerman claims that he was acting in self-defense. Now, Professor, what do you see happening as this case plays out?
I'm not certain. I'm trying to be optimistic because I do think, as I mentioned earlier, the mobilizations that have happened within public discourse as well as on the ground in that community around this case can actually open up quite a bit of pressure and scrutiny on this case that could do it a lot of good. I believe in the power of social movements, and there's a real potential here, similar to the Gina Six case in Louisiana a few years ago. There's a real opportunity here to critique the criminal, quote-unquote, justice system and to move forward a better alternative while still seeking justice for this man who was murdered in his neighborhood.